D. Can you define unconditional love for me? S. This would be somewhat impossible to accurately define in your system of concepts and wordings, as there are no concepts available to do justice to this. It can be described, however it cannot be defined. D. Then could you describe it or give me an analogy? S. We would say that the most accurate portrayal or example of this on your planet would be that of a mother's love for her child, because she loves this child regardless of its meandering into and out of social conforming. When one finds one's child has transgressed the laws of society and must pay the penance, then more love is given, more understanding is poured out. And this is exactly as it should be, as there is from the child's point of view a much greater need for this 23-6 conversations with a spirit love and understanding. So this love is given unconditionally regardless of the circumstances of the transgressions. This love is given simply because of the bonding nature between the two. This is an example of unconditional love. D. This is what we have to learn from each other. S. That is accurate. D. But you know how people are. Love is very difficult for some people, let alone unconditional love. That is a very hard concept for some people to understand. S. That is accurate. That is the wisdom shown in using this as a lesson, because this is such a difficult one to learn. D. Wasn't this what Jesus was really trying to teach when he came to earth? S. That is an undisputed fact. His incarnation was the personification of unconditional love. Many are now attuning to this fact and are becoming aware of the subtleties in the Christ's teachings. There are many more lessons on a subtler plane than could ever be hoped for in a little. D. Is there another lesson you wanted to present? S. We would say that tolerance and patience are like twins, in that each is a complement to the other. For without one there could not be the other. D. Are these some of the lessons that we should try to learn when we come to Earth? S. That is accurate. A well-rounded and wholesome personality would not be found lacking in these qualities. S. We would speak to those who feel that perhaps there should be more to life than what they have experienced. You desire more, yet you seem not to find the door, perhaps, to go through to experience it. Your door, if you choose to use that analogy, is your own mind and simply nothing more. The ultimate goal on the physical plane is to know yourself. You shall be offered many lessons which will challenge you to know yourself. And oftentimes these will be painful. We would ask you to examine the rose and see that in such beauty there is always some element of hurt. For to truly enjoy the rose it must be plucked from the stalk. And so there is the danger of sticking one's finger on the rose thorns. This could be used as an analogy of life on the physical plane. The return trip 237, however, in those times of distress and urgency, we would ask that you always remember that your experiences are given to you by yourself. You, yourself, choose that which is to be experienced, so that you may learn those lessons which you need. Thus through these painful experiences you will indeed begin to know yourself. And if you learn something from these experiences, then they will not have been in vain. You are truly the master of your own fate and destiny. You, yourself, are in complete control of what you call your lifetime. You are the one who is making decisions as to when and where and how. We, from our point of view, can see all the options spread out before you. But it is you, yourself, who must make the final decisions. You also cannot help but influence other individuals while you are living on this plane. You influence individuals continuously. D. I thought we were not supposed to influence another individual. S. It is one thing to dominate, but yet something altogether different to influence. For would it be possible for you to teach if you were not able to influence? Influence is not bad. For each person has the ability to discriminate between that which is good and that which is not. You simply put your pieces on the board and allow others to decide which they choose. There always seems to be so much turmoil on Earth. This is quite natural in the cyclic nature of events which are destined to occur on this planet. However, from your perspective this is quite unnatural, for you would seem to prefer that period in which all is as it should be, so to say. However, were all to remain as it should be, nothing would ever change. It would be as it should be forever. That is not the purpose of Earth. for Earth is a testing ground, a battleground, a playground, and many more concepts. So in order to accommodate these many varied experiential manifestations, for lack of a better terminology, it is necessary to occasionally shift the realities such that the emphasis is less on one and more on the other. Perhaps it will be less of a playground and more of a battleground and so forth. The priorities are simply shifted around when needed. And that conversations with a spirit which you perceive as upheaval is in fact merely the physical manifestation of the reshuffling of priorities. We would say that you should follow your own intuitive guidance while on Earth. This would be most appropriate. For that which is highly undesirable to one may, in fact, be highly desirable to another. There is no set or firm reality. No real truth, for all is in fact relative. So one must be careful in assigning truths and realities, to see that those realities and truths do not impinge on another's. Thus when creating realities, it is important to always remember to include the disclaimer, that only that which is most appropriate will be manifest. We would say, that which is necessary is that which will be manifest. D. It is very difficult for us here on Earth to see the anguish, heartache and pain of other people, and recognize that it is evolution. S. That is true given the perspective of the mortal experience. We feel this is perhaps one area which is not quite understood by many who are working now on your plane. It would not be beneficial to describe that point at which you on Earth now stand in this evolution. For were we to say it is the beginning, then there would be a great heaviness of heart, which there should not be. And were we to say it is at the end, there would be an eager anticipation of that which may not be for some time. So it would be most appropriate to simply accept that we are in this upheaval and turmoil at whatever point we are in. And to work in this period we are now in and to allow the cycle to continue on its own. The most important period to work on is the present. And if your reality is now only in the wash cycle or the spin cycle, it is irrelevant. For the laundry will surely be done. D. Laugh, but we don't know which cycle we're in. S. The souls who decide to go down and have another cycle of life in your time are either foolhardy or brave, depending on their viewpoint. Some of them do it just out of duty because they know they need to go through a certain number of lives to be able to develop to a certain point. Most of these are the ones that are rather dull and plodding and conventional on your world. Other souls who are more advanced do it with both eyes open, knowing full well it will be difficult. But the return trip 23-9, they know that it will advance their karma since they are going into that life already advanced, and they know they will be able to do two or three lifetimes worth of advancement in one lifetime. This is possible by going down at this particular time when it is difficult to advance spiritually in the materialism of your world. These more advanced souls are able to stay in touch and keep in tune, and they do much spiritual advancement because of the work they have to put into it. Due to the resistance of the general world trend, this causes them to become that much stronger, to where it is the equivalent of two or three lifetimes worth of growth. When they cross back over to this side, they are extremely advanced, and they are usually asked to stay on this side for a while to help prepare those of us who wish to go back. Then after a while, they say, "Well, gee, you know I'd like to go back, too, and do some more advancing," and so they do. And that is the way it goes in the pattern of things. We would say to you now gathered in this room, that each of you can, in your own particular way, now see in some form or another a journey which lies ahead of you. We would say that actually in very simple terms, everyone on this planet has this same journey. However, many are more aware of it than others. D. We're all on the same path, just going in different directions. S. That is accurate. However, all paths will eventually converge and meet in one single place. D. It just makes many more twists and turns along the way. S. That is accurate. It is amazing that all the information in this book was obtained from many different people who did not know each other. They were of various religions and occupations. Yet in spite of their differences, the information they gave while in deep trance does not contradict but rather complements each other. In many places it fits so well when combined that it almost sounds as though it came from one person instead of several. This is an amazing phenomena in itself, that when put together it creates a solid book of cohesive information. To me this is proof that they were seeing and reporting similar scenes when regressed to conversations with a spirit, the so-called dead state. If they all see the same things, then I believe the afterlife must be a very real, identifiable place with definite rules and regulations and a hierarchy that keeps it all in order. I don't claim to have all the answers. Their questions about such a subject as life after death are far too deep and complex. The reader will probably be able to think of many questions they would have liked to have asked that I did not even think of. But such is the way it is when you open the door to search for knowledge, and hunt for the answers to questions that most people refuse to acknowledge even exist. The information I have received in my work is probably only the barest skimming of the surface. It does give us a glimpse of what lies in that other world that we all must someday visit. There can be no accident that similar information came from many subjects while in deep trance. In order for their descriptions to resemble so closely what each other have said, they must truly be picturing the same places and circumstances. It isn't always easy to accept another way of thinking that partially or completely disrupts the pattern laid down for us since childhood. But if it contains the ring of truth, then it is worth considering and exploring. Again, this information is merely hearsay and we will never know until we actually make the journey ourselves. But if we can find out this much knowledge from those who have already made the trek and carry the experience within their soul's memories, then we are at least one step closer to understanding the frightening realm of the unknown. I believe all of us carry these memories and maybe they will be awakened at the time when we most need them. I think my research is much like reading in a geography book about a strange and exotic country which lies far across the seas. It is a real place which we know exists because the book describes it and shows us pictures of it, and tells of the activities the inhabitants are involved in. But until we actually go there and see for ourselves, the information remains only words and pictures in a book. Maybe the author exaggerated, maybe the author minimized, maybe he only reported from his own point of view while another geography book would have reported the facts differently. Any time we travel to a foreign country, we see it through our own eyes and we may notice something that the return trip completely escaped the notice of someone else. Everything that happens to us is colored by our own thoughts and experiences. Thus we will never actually know until we leave our body for the last time and journey toward the brilliant light that marks the barrier between this world and the next. Even with the knowledge I have gained through my work, I am not anxious to make that trip. At least, not yet. I feel I have much to accomplish yet here on this plane. For in my study of death, I have found the celebration of life. But I think when the time comes, the journey will not hold as much fear as it once would have. Because I know I am not going into a strange, dark, forbidding unknown. I am merely returning home, and there will be as many familiar people and sights on those planes as there are on this one. Maybe the information I have found has allowed us to lift the veil a little and peer beyond, and allowed us to glimpse through the glass into the shadows, and what we see is not as dark as it was before. It is the awakening of memories long buried. And the memories are truly wonderful, because what we see is a beautiful sight to behold. I am grateful that I was allowed to have these conversations with the spirits. What they have told me encourages the shedding of fears and doubts and brings the realization that what lies beyond the barrier is only a joyous homecoming. About the author, Dolores Cannon was born in 1931 in St. Louis, Missouri. She was educated and lived in Missouri until her marriage in 1951 to a career Navy man. She spent the next 20 years traveling all over the world as a typical Navy wife and raised her family. In 1968 she had her first exposure to reincarnation via regressive hypnosis when her husband, an amateur hypnotist, stumbled across the past life of a woman he was working with, outlined in her book Five Lives Remembered. At that time the past life subject was unorthodox and very few people were experimenting in the field. It sparked her interest, but had to be put aside as the demands of family life took precedence. In 1970 her husband was discharged as a disabled veteran, and they retired to the hills of Arkansas. She then started her writing career and began selling her articles to various magazines and newspapers. When her children began lives of their own, her interest in regressive hypnosis and reincarnation was reawakened. She studied the various hypnosis methods and thus developed her own unique technique, which enabled her to gain the most efficient release of information from her subjects. Since 1979, she has regressed and cataloged information gained from hundreds of volunteers. She calls herself a regressionist and a psychic researcher who records lost knowledge. She has also worked with the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, for a number of years. Her published books include Conversations with Nostradamus, 3 volumes, Keepers of the Garden, and Jesus and the Essence. She has written several other books about her most interesting cases. Dolores has 4 children and 12 grandchildren who demand that she be solidly balanced between the real world of her family and the unseen world of her work.